But first up, listen to this. My first guest, a professor of Nepic and Indian American Studies at the University of Colorado, the center of a controversy for about the last month. I'm anxious to talk to this man. Please welcome Ward Churchill, ladies and gentlemen. Professor, how you doing?
I'm well.
Glad to have you here. I have been following what's going on with you, and I would say this right off the bat, some things we have in common, some things we don't. I don't agree with you on everything, but I know to a degree what you're going through. Things taken out of context, buzzwords. You've been Dixie chicked. It's okay. You're in a club now. But let's start out, because I know you haven't gotten a chance in the media to say your piece, and I'm going to give you that chance, because I think you deserve to be heard. I've read your stuff, and when you read the complete transcript, it makes a lot more sense than when people take it out of context. Start off with what started all the controversy, the little Eichmann comment, because that's mostly what people have heard, and I think most Americans are saying, how can anybody in their right mind say that the people in the World Trade Center had it coming, which is sort of how that was interpreted. So just go through it a little bit. What America, the blood, you called your essay Chickens Coming Home to Roost, the blood that America as a country has on its hands.
That's the chickens.
Yeah.
The Eichmanns, on the other hand, comes from a notion put forth by Hannah Arendt a long time ago when she went to the Eichmann trial.
Okay, but that's the Eichmann part. Let's talk about the country of America. Okay. Just tell the folks what you think, and these are facts. Because it's very hard for people to hear this about their own country. It's kind of hearing that your relative is a killer, that your brother is Ted Kaczynski. But America, let's go through the list.
Well, it occurred to me, because the thing was being framed even before the towers came down, is number one, senseless. And it occurred to me immediately that anything that was that well planned and propulsive was not senseless. There was a sense to it that could be agreed with or disagreed with, but you needed to know what it was.
All right, let me do it for you, Professor.
Right.
There's the bringing over of the slaves. Okay, that was not good. America did that. The Middle Passage.
I was working backwards, actually.
Okay, but I know, but we don't have the whole lecture hall today. We just got to get to the point.
True enough.
So how many people died there? Probably, I don't know.
Million. The Middle Passage, you're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 60 million.
Millions of people.
Yeah, millions
okay,
of
then
people.
We're talking about the Indians in America. Your people, right? You're part Indian?
That's correct.
Okay. I mean, when the white man came here, there were probably 12 or 13 million Indians in America.
Usually number 15 and reduced to a quarter million or a little less by 1890, so you're talking 14 million and change there.
Okay. So we have a lot of blood out of hands. Then you talk about the first Gulf War. How many Iraqis do you think died there? What are the facts on that?
Well, the standard number is somewhere between 1 and 200,000 in combatant capacity and collateral damage that was unestimated.
And then the sanctions killed another, you say, half a million Iraqi children?
And probably that many adults overall.
Okay.
So you got a million people.
So you, people, I know we don't want to hear this, but the country of America has blood on our hands. I don't think anyone can deny that. Not to mention in Germany and Japan in 1945, when we were close to winning the war, we obliterated many Japanese and Dresden cities. The civilian population, aimed at civilians, wiped out between 50 and 90% of the biggest 67 Japanese cities. That's a lot of people we've killed. Answer the question that people are now asking, perhaps, which is, okay, but that's the American government. Why am I connected to that? How are the people in the World Trade Center who are working for Dean Witter, what is their connection to this? Why are they guilty?
First of all, the government doesn't kill anybody. It's Americans that go out in the name of the government, follow orders, and kill people. And there's an infrastructure behind that that makes that possible. That's composed of Americans as well.
Yeah, but sometimes, come on, Americans go out and kill in the name of their government for a good cause. You wouldn't say that opposing Hitler was wrong, would you?
I wouldn't say opposing Hitler was wrong. I might say that some of the ways in which Hitler was opposed were wrong. Saturation bombing of German cities and knocking out civilians was a war crime by the estimation of no less than Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Okay, but fighting World War II wasn't wrong, was it?
I would have fought in World War II.
Okay, so answer the question I just asked you, the little Eichmann issue. Even if America committed these crimes, I don't understand what you're saying. I don't understand how the average American can be as guilty as you say they should be.
I didn't even make the claim that it was an average American. I called it a technocratic elite that was resident to the tower, which would not have course, include average people like janitors, food service workers, and so forth. These would be...
Yes, but you're talking about people. You're talking about people who are working at the financial industries that were prominent in the World Trade Center. I can read from your essay. You say... Okay, you say they were not innocent. You said, innocent, give me a break. Make that connection for us.
If you're performing a technical function, a byproduct of which is the immiseration and mass death of millions of people, you are not innocent. You are performing a function along the lines of what Adolf Eichmann performed. He was a bureaucrat. He was a technocrat. He killed no one directly. He just made it possible and efficient to do so.
All right. Well, let's bring out Michael and hear what he has to say. I don't know if you realize, but, well, let me just bring him out. Joining us now, a 9/11 family member who is both a public critic of Ward's views. He's also defending him for what he has to say. Please welcome Michael Faunin. Michael, how you doing?
Good. Thank you for coming aboard.
So... your brother worked for Cantor Fitzgerald, the company that I think more than any other company had people. How many people from Cantor Fitzgerald were lost in the World Trade Center?
Somewhere around 700.
700 people from one company. Your brother was one of them. I think a lot of people first want to know, why are you doing this? Why are you coming aboard and talking to this man who basically is saying that your brother was one of the people who sort of had it coming? Certainly wasn't innocent.
In some respects, I'm challenging him. I'm challenging him on, you know, how he, his insensitive characterization of my brother. And I strongly disagree with his analogy. I think it's pathetic. I really do. However, and we've talked, and I told him if he has something constructive that he is trying to say, say it clearly. I mean, what is he trying?
Do you think he does have anything to do? Because I read your letter to him, and I have to tell you, of all the things I've read about 9/11, it was one of the most eloquent and sensible things I've ever read. Because, yes, you disagree with him on the Eichmann analogy, as I do. Because I don't understand, again, how you can compare the passive-aggressive problem that Americans have. I mean, yes, you're right. We're lazy, and we're arrogant, and we're greedy, and we're gluttonous, and we're myopic, and all those things do cause some misery around the world. But Eichmann was someone who was proactively killing people. It's the difference between if I pick up a shovel and hit you over the head versus if somebody else is hitting you over the head and I'm over there listening to my thing and I'm on my cell phone. And yes, I'm a little bit of a twit. I don't hear it. I don't care about it. But that's different than doing it, isn't
it? Well, Eichmann actually didn't do it. He arranged train schedules. He arranged logistics. He was a bureaucrat. He was a technocrat. He was an official, but he was not an especially highly placed official. And when you, for example, maximize profits by displacing labor functions into sweatshops in Malaysia, you're doing a function comparable to what Eichmann did.
Well, how do you
know this is massive?
I completely disagree with that analogy.
Okay.
I completely disagree with that analogy.
Okay.
Eichmann was an evil man, an evil doer. My brother was not anything that would even remotely resemble evil. And your comparison is insensitive, and it defeats whatever meaning you are trying to convey.
Do you think he owes you an apology?
Yes, I do.
An apology.
All right, this is turning into open. Yeah. Never mind. That's not the show I've ever really wanted to do. But if you guys want to do...
A question back. Actually, slightly knew your brother, and I will probably take the exception that you wish to make, but would you make the counter-argument that there was no one to fit the description that I'm offering in the building? Do we have immaculate genocide occurring here? There's no perpetrators?
Yeah, I would take issue with that. I knew more than just my brother. There was a lot of beautiful people there, and not one person that I knew would even remotely be characterized with an Eichmann, a little Eichmann.
So who does this, Mike?
Okay. Well, I think we've gone over that territory. Let me ask you this other question, though. I know from reading what you've written that you feel that there's been a lot of exploitation of what happened on 9/11. I could not agree more. I've gotten in trouble, as you know, for many things, some things similar to what you've said, some not. And one thing I said that people took objection to is when they were deciding what they should build on the site, I said, well, among other whatever they're also going to build on that site, they should build a Why They Hate Us pavilion, which went over like a lead balloon, as you might imagine in America. But what do you think about that fact, about that suggestion, that we just put up in that place, among other things, but as part of the structure, some place where people could learn and make these connections that the professor is talking about?
I don't think that's an appropriate place to put a Why They Hate Us. I think there are other places.
But isn't it why it happened there? Because they hate us? Don't you think there are reasons why they do hate us?
There's definitely reasons.
And they're valid, some of them.
Perhaps, yeah.
So why not use it as a place to learn?
But to put it there, in the memory of those beautiful people, I think there's other ways to explore that.
Okay. All right.
But that's not the place to remind us of hate.
This is the place, on Real Time with Bill Maher. Gentlemen, I thank you for coming on. Professor, you walk out on the edge there. I don't always agree with you, but somebody's got to walk out on the edge to know where it is. Thank you very much.